welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
Good. We are going to look at anticoagulants and particularly a prevention of coronary artery disease. By way of background, survivors of a first heart attack face a substantial risk of additional cardiovascular events, and that includes a death, another heart attack, arrhythmias, angina, stroke, a whole plethora of problems. And patients and perhaps their families often ask what the future holds. What is the information about prognosis? And if you look at a diverse group of folks who have had an MI and you're looking at sort of short term, which means in hospital or 30-day mortality, we've done a rather remarkable job in the world, or at least in the United States, decreasing mortality in those groups over the past 30 years. Results of some of the reperfusion strategies and proven preventive therapies such as beta blockers and aspirins and statins have played a large role in that. The current 30-day mortality for all coronary artery syndromes is probably in the 2.5 to 3% range, meaning that, you know, 2.5 to 3% of people will die following an MI in the 30-day period. An analysis looking at a couple of million people by the National Registry of Myocardial Infarction showed that the mortality after an MI declined from about 10.3% in 94 to 6.3% in 2010, a rather remarkable drop. So as we look to approaches to prevention, particularly tertiary prevention, just to remind listeners that tertiary prevention is the prevention of recurrent disease or death in people that already have the condition. So primary prevention is clearly getting it before it starts, and tertiary prevention is keeping it from getting worse. So there is a trial looking at rivaroxaban and aspirin to prevent coronary vascular events. Rivaroxaban is used to thin the blood so clots don't form. It's also used to treat blood clots. You found a poem published at the end of last year, 2017, in the New England Journal of Medicine. It starts on page 1319, and it attempts to answer the question, is rivaroxaban with or without aspirin superior to aspirin alone for the tertiary prevention of coronary vascular disease? Mark, what did they do?
So I've got some folk art here in my office, and it's from a local guy named Catman, and he uses found materials, and it says, a little good, a little bad, like most people. And you could say that about drugs, too. A little good, a little bad, like most medications, and that's the case here. So the combination previously of using an anticoagulant plus an antiplatelet agent like an aspirin has been not recommended because the balance of benefits, which is preventing cardiovascular events and death, was outweighed by the harms because it caused major bleeding, including hemorrhagic stroke. So this study was designed to look at one of the newer DOAs, the direct oral anticoagulants, rivaroxaban, and they randomized 27,000 patients who had stable heart disease to either rivaroxaban alone, 5 milligrams twice daily, aspirin, 100 milligrams once daily, kind of the usual care, or rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice daily, so a slightly lower dose, plus aspirin 100 milligrams once daily. They initially recruited almost 30,000 patients, but they did an active run-in period, which meant they gave them rivaroxaban and aspirin and saw how they tolerated it. There were several major bleeds, and they excluded those patients. So that's kind of cheating, okay? That creates a bias in favor of treatment if you weed out, almost 10% of patients who didn't tolerate the medication. We don't get the luxury of doing that in our practice, of course. Once they did that, the groups were still similar at the beginning of the study. They were not quite 70 years old, 90% had coronary disease, 62% a previous MI, 27% peripheral vascular disease. So pretty, consistent with a tertiary prevention population. They followed them for about 2 years, and they stopped the study early when they saw a significant reduction in the primary composite outcome of non-fatal MI, stroke, or cardiovascular death. Now, that's another thing that often is criticized because if you start to see the survival curves separate and just when it barely becomes statistically significant, you say, aha, let's stop. What you miss out on is what might have happened during years 3, 4, and 5, which is maybe those curves start to come back together again. Maybe there's some short-term benefit, but long-term harm. And so that's, you know, another thing that creates a bias in favor of the drug. They had 15 comparisons that they reported. So appropriately, they, instead of saying P less than 0.05, they said P less than 0.0025 was statistically significant. So that's good. The composite I mentioned outcome, the combined outcome, was less common in the rivaroxaban plus aspirin group than in aspirin alone. The number needed to treat was 77 to prevent one event over 2 years. There were trends in the right direction for all of the individual outcomes, plus all-cause mortality. Now, they weren't statistically significant in some cases by the usual 0.05, but they were, again, consistent with what we saw with the composite outcome. Major bleeding, on the other hand, was more common in the rivaroxaban plus aspirin group. Number needed to harm was about 83 over 2 years to cause one serious bleed. So the bottom line is that in patients with known vascular disease, cardiovascular disease, this combination of rivaroxaban 2.5 twice daily plus aspirin did result in a greater reduction in the composite outcome, but also increased the risk of major bleeding. So a little good, a little bad. I have some concern that the use of an active run-in period and also shutting the study down early may have inflated the magnitude of the benefit seen and minimized the harm because you got rid of people before the study even started who might not tolerate the medicine.
So it sounds like given that the closeness and the number needed to treat and the number needed to harm and the side effects that you're talking about and some of the methodologic problems, that you're not ready to switch over for tertiary prevention to using this combination.
You know, I think you could, you know, you could consider it selectively, again, looking at the individual patient and is that person at higher than average or lower than average risk of bleeding? That might tip you one way or the other. Are they higher or lower than average risk of a subsequent cardiovascular event? So I think you kind of have to look at the whole picture for a patient. Hopefully, we will see other studies, perhaps using other DOAs like dabigatran or one of those other direct oral anticoagulants. I can imagine this is a big market and the drug company, the other companies are saying, hey, we want to get a piece of that. So they may be doing studies of their own DOA. So if I saw two or three studies come out with similar drugs or drugs in the same class showing similar outcomes, that might be more convincing, and especially if they didn't do things like that active run-in.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the information. Very helpful. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.